Greetings and salutations, Adventures in Odyssey. I'm Jesse, editor of Focus on the Family Clubhouse Magazine.
And I'm Bob, producer of the Adventures in Odyssey Club. Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
Today on the podcast, we're talking about the latest three-part mystery, The Rydell Realizations.
Not to be confused with The Rydell Revelations from a few years back. And yes, we'll be talking about all three parts of this new adventure, so we need to issue another spoiler warning.
If you haven't heard all this adventure, pause the podcast and go listen.
But if you're caught up, get ready to hear from writer-director Phil Lawler and sound designer Luke Gano about the work, the challenges, and the rewards of this adventure.
Now hang on, I'm getting ready. Okay, I'm ready. Let's do it. Luke, Phil, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi.
Great to be here.
You know, excited to talk today because I'm a big Maury fan. And Phil, I remember going back years ago on the podcast, you said you created Maury Rydell, kind of like a Moriarty character from the Sherlock Holmes stories, to be this foil, right? So can you walk us through that original idea, why you wanted a character like that in Odyssey?
Well, we had not had, since the chairman, I suppose, a real nefarious supervillain, if we can call him that. That was probably the initial thinking for me was, let's see if we can do this, but not somebody who's mwahaha going to take over the world necessarily, but somebody who was super smart and who could had his own plans to do things. How would that happen? What would that kind of character be? And so, yes, his character, Maury Rydell, came from Moriarty. The Maury part of it did, but the Rydell was a different way of pronouncing Riddle.
Oh.
Maury Riddle. For the most part, I love names. There's some names that are just, you know, names. but most of the names that I try to come up with have some sort of Easter egg, you know, to them, a little bit of background to them. And that was basically what I was trying to do with Maury. As I was thinking about him, I was thinking, you know, we've kind of done that. We've kind of set up the big bad and had this really big thing that he's after. What is it that this person is after? You know, whether it's, you know, like the chairman and Blackard taking over the world, or whether it's taking over Odyssey and doing something really bad in Odyssey. But then I'm thinking, well, maybe we should just make this guy super, super smart. I've known super, super smart people in my life, and a lot of them, they're capable of really, really bad things, believe me. But a lot of it is not because they plan to do really, really bad things, but because they get super bored. They're really just trying to see if they can do things that will keep them interested. How Maury sort of changed in that respect for me was that he wasn't necessarily out to do something, you know, mwahaha, I'm going to wring my hands like the supervillain, as much as he was, I've never been in this kind of situation before. I've never been in a place where everybody, for the most part, the vast majority of people profess a faith in Jesus Christ and profess Christianity. And so I'm going to test this. I'm going to see if they're really true to their convictions or not. That I found far more intriguing about Maury, about the possibility of developing his character in that direction. There was a lot more that went into it, believe me. There were a lot of discussions and a lot of other back and forths and everything. But I think that in a nutshell, that's the most concise way I can put it.
Well, the story that became The Rydell Realizations was actually in the works for a long time. Where did the initial idea come from and how did it evolve into what we have today?
Well, the character of Maury, again, developed over and over and over again, as you just said, and as we've seen. We had to decide where he was going to go, what was going to happen with him. Once he became a ward of John Avery Whittaker, he and Suzu, his sister, became a ward of John Avery Whittaker. We had to figure out where we were going to go with him. We always knew that we were going to try to do something with his character, whether he becomes a better person or whether he becomes a worse person. He was always on that knife's edge. That was what was really fun about Maury, is that either way, you know, it wouldn't take much to make him a super genius, a super mad scientist genius. You know, it wouldn't take much to push him in either direction. We wanted to make sure that he was around a good influence, and he obviously liked being here in Odyssey, and he actually liked it for a reason that nobody suspected. It wasn't because he can easily manipulate stuff, it's because he's never had this kind of a home before. He's never had this kind of an experience before. And so, as far as the realizations was concerned, we had to figure out what would make him rethink some of the things that he's been doing. Mm. For somebody who's that smart, who's somebody who's that brilliant, what would actually affect him? What would make him take a step back and go, wow, I've got to take a look at some of the things that I've done in my past and see how this has affected what's going on right now in certain situations. And of course, Suzu plays into that because Suzu is very important to him. And that's kind of how the germ of the realizations, the Raidel realizations came about.
And many listeners have wanted Mori to face some consequences for those bad actions. You know, I can think of, you know, what he did in the escape room, for instance, right?
Yeah.
There has to be some comeuppance for that. And we get a little bit of that in this episode. So do fan discussions influence your storytelling and where you're going?
I think that the fan conversations are very entertaining for me. I really enjoy seeing discussions going back and forth and how into it people are. That's really, really fun. But personally, for me as a writer, I have to kind of distance myself from some of that. I don't find the fan discussions, as far as where the character should go, to be helpful in some respects. There's some things that I look at and go, yeah, that's an interesting idea. Usually it's stuff that we're already talking about.
Right. Or somewhere you're not going to go, right? Because Connie and Mitch aren't getting married, I guess. It's
exactly, exactly.
Or you're so far down the road, really. Yeah. By the time they're talking about one thing, we are already beyond that and moving on to something else.
Yeah, you know? A lot of that does happen. But then, especially with Mori and his character, I really wanted to have something else going on with him. And I didn't want that thing to be influenced too much by what I was reading, you know, and going about what was going on in the Greater Odyssey fan community. They can influence some of the stuff that we do, but I think for the most part, we're charting a course for a lot of characters, not just Mori, but for a lot of characters, we're charting a course and trying to make stories happen in ways that the fans don't expect.
Yeah. On the album's end in the Adventures in Odyssey Club, listeners can hear a bonus feature. It focuses on the production of these episodes and how Atticus Schaefer couldn't be there for the recording. Of course, we've alluded to the actor who plays Mori. How do you think his absence, Phil, affected the rest of the actors?
The actors are all really very professional. They really are great at what they do. We do spend a lot of time casting, and especially for ongoing roles, we spend a lot of time with the actors, as much time as we possibly can, to try to get them to understand. And then the actors, of course, take over the role themselves. They want to embody the role of the recurring characters and the ongoing characters especially. They take ownership of that. And so because of that, it's always good to have everybody there when we're recording. I mean, that's going to be the best way to do it. It's going to be the best way for the production guys to have all the stuff that's recorded and everybody's there. And it's also really good to have all of the actors there because we record what's known as family style. That's having everybody talk to everybody and be there in the studio at the same time. Actors can react to each other. You get little nuances of performance and here and there, and it just makes it more real. In this instance, of course, we couldn't have Atticus had a family emergency and couldn't be there during the recording session. So we had the stalwart showrunner Marshall Younger fill in. Marshall did a great job. And then, of course, it's up to the director, myself, and the rest of the team to make sure that whoever's playing that role, so for instance, Marshall, will give the line in such a way that we know the proper response is going to come from the actual actors. That's always a chore. But again, they're so professional. All these folks are so professional that really that's not, from an acting standpoint, it's not a big, huge drawback. We would like everybody in the studio, yes, but they're all very professional about it.
Okay.
From a production standpoint, I have to hand you over to Luke as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, I was going to ask that question because, Luke, how did Atticus's absence affect the production, you know, from a sound design perspective?
Well, not having an actor there for the main recording session does mean we need to budget additional post-production time to edit all those tracks. I mean, if you haven't heard the Album 76 bonus feature, you need to go listen to that right now. And we break it down in detail, what we did and all that stuff. I don't think it affected the end product in the slightest. It usually doesn't, but it added almost like an extra week of production time that wouldn't have been needed in like an ideal scenario.
Yeah. Well, we just did it again in this most recent session. Unfortunately, the actress who plays Suzu was not able to be there. And so I played Suzu.
Oh, wow.
That's right.
It was so good.
Yeah. And a fine Suzu you were, too.
That's right.
Thank you.
In fact, I don't even think they'll be replacing that voice. It was just that good.
I'm sure April would love to hear that.
Yeah. No, I can't compare to April Hong, for sure.
Luke, you worked with Jared DePasquale for these episodes. And, of course, he's created a lot of the music on the Raidel episodes. So tell us something about working with Jared.
every composer we work with on Odyssey is great, but it was really fun working on these episodes with Jared. He puts a lot of thought, heart, and care into every cue he creates. Literally every musical note he scores is very intentional and it's carefully plotted out. As soon as he'd write a new section of music for the show, he'd send it to me with a description of what he was thinking and the stuff he was trying out. And we talk through every cue in real time as he composed them, which is a little different than how some of our other composers tend to work. For these shows, we really wanted to incorporate music themes and sounds we've heard in other Rydell shows. I was actually just skimming through our email threads earlier today, and one of the responses I wrote him after he completed a cue in part three was that I felt like the cue was, for the Rydell story arc, an acknowledgement of the past, a celebration of the now, and hope for the future. And
wow.
I think he did a great job with that.
That does a lot.
Yeah. Well, I wish he could be on here with us to chat about it.
What's really funny about that is that you look at that and go, how am I supposed to compose that?
Yeah.
How does that translate?
And he did.
And yet he does.
That's right.
He does.
He's really
it's
good.
Fantastic.
Hey, let's pause for a minute and take a question from a fan.
Woo-hoo.
Known as a totally random question, aka
TRQ.
This one comes from Jay Shalade Girl. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Is your sock drawer a total mess or extremely organized? This kind of sounds like some sort of psychology experiment. I don't know. So talk about your sock drawer.
Yeah, they don't get much more random than that.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you my sock drawer is extremely organized. And I just did that years and years and years ago. My bed is made every morning. My silverware is always in its place. The plates and everything is. I don't like a messy kitchen. I don't like a messy bathroom. My socks are laid out. Not only are my sock drawer extremely organized, I don't fold my socks. I just lay them out. So that way the air gets in them and they're nice and airy when I put them on. So,
oh,
yeah, I'm impressed. I've never put that much thought. Mine is a nightmare.
My sock drawer is organized. I don't necessarily fold them either, but they're also not like alphabetized or anything like that. I don't know how you alphabetize socks. Yeah, it's generally organized. It's annoying though when one sock, like, you know, develops a hole in it and so you have to get rid of that sock. Then what do you do with the other sock? Like, it feels sad to throw two away. So that's the conundrum. At the bottom of my sock drawer, underneath all the organized ones, are the misfits that no longer fit in.
What Luke is not telling you is that he's got a whole closet full of sock puppets. That's exactly what he does. They all talk to each other. He does these little plays at night. And
Totally.
I got a hole in a sock yesterday. So what I do is I cut them both up and then they become rags.
I used to make pot holders out of my old socks.
Oh, there you go.
I remember when we had golden retrievers, we just tie them together and use them as a tug toy.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. You sure?
All right. So that was from, you better pronounce that again, Jesse, because I'm not sure I can get that one.
I thought it was Jay Shalade Girl.
Jay Shalade Girl.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jay Shalade Girl. Luke, in the recording script, part two of this episode ended with Suzu being kind of confronted by the bad guy, Marvin, in an alley. Mm-hmm. But in the final production, part two ends with Cooper taking Suzu to the hospital. Why did this change, and how did it alter your approach to producing the scene?
Well, part three of these shows was just too long. With some exceptions, we try to keep it every episode under 25 minutes and 30 seconds. We have to for radio and CD and the different releases. Yeah,
occasionally a club show might creep a little longer than that.
There are exceptions. Sometimes, though, that means lines or scenes have to get cut. In this case, it means scenes need to get shifted around or condensed. Originally, part two ended with a chase down an alley and Suzu being cornered and Marvin demanding answers, but we had to cut the whole chase down the alley part, brought in the remainder of the Marvin-Suzu scene from part three, and then ended part two with what was originally the continuation to that episode.
Wow.
So, something we've got to watch out for when we have to do things like this is Chris's raps at the end of the shows. We need to make sure what she's saying makes sense with the end of the episode. Sometimes that means we need to re-record her raps or cut a line or two, which is what we had to end up doing for this show, actually.
Okay.
Huh. We've talked a lot about particular scenes that you've produced over the years, Luke. And there's one scene in this, in the hotel room. It's Maury, Emily, and Marvin. And there's a lot of physical action, a lot of moving around. Just wondering, was that a hard scene to produce? And then again, sometimes, is it hard to figure out, like, sometimes an easy scene actually ends up difficult, and a difficult scene might be easy. So
talk
about that one.
That action scene was a hard one. Lots of movement, and I actually had to kind of tie myself to a chair to get the right sound effects. thankfully, there was someone in the room to untie me when I got stuck. Having Emily stuck in the closet throughout that scene was challenging. We need to be able to hear everything she's saying, but still have her be pretty muffled behind the door. That took a lot of time to figure out. But yeah, one of those scenes that looked easier on paper but was more difficult to produce would have to be all the scenes at Witt's house, where they're unraveling the mystery and solving the clues. Those longer, more dialogue-heavy scenes, they can take a lot of work to make sure we're clearly understanding every word of everything everyone is saying. Mm-hmm. I've got to be careful how I mix in the background and the music, sometimes boosting the consonants of the character's dialogue so no words get lost.
Oh.
So we as audience can follow the plot and enjoy the story. It's the little things, really, that end up being the most work sometimes.
I just want to add something in there. The performances of the actors in that scene, Marvin, Emily, Maury, they added so much to just being able to, you know, knowing when, for instance, the knots are too tight, or, oh my goodness, you know, can I get out, or how Emily gets out of the closet, all the body efforts and things like that. That's another thing that Luke and all of our production engineers, all of our sound designers in the studio are great constant reminders that we got to have those body efforts. We got to make sure that the actors are grunting in the right place, or yelling or screaming or falling over or going oof or whatever it is. I thought they did such a great job in that particular scene. I was so pleased with how it all came about. Sometimes it's difficult to get, as a director, I have to make sure that they're visualizing the same thing that I got in my head. So I have to make sure that everybody's on the same page. But they got it. I mean, they were right there and understood exactly where that stuff happened and how it was supposed to lay out and what they were supposed to sound like.
Yeah, this is an episode with some intense moments, such as when Marvin knocks over books in his trailer, or when he pushes Emily and Maury around. How do you find, Luke, the balance between making those scenes appropriately intense but not too scary? I mean, especially for younger listeners.
As storytellers, we always want an intense moment to feel intense, right? I'm sure we've all had those moments where we're watching a movie and the situation was supposed to be scary, but something wasn't working and it just came off as kind of silly or flat. And so when Marvin gets mad and shoves stuff off the table, we need to be scared of him. Mm-hmm. We have to remember, though, that our target audience is 8 to 12 years old, and we've got to find that right balance of age-appropriate intensity. And that means here, I had to use a take of Marvin's actor that he didn't sound quite as fierce with his vocal foley. Mm. And I need to make sure the crash of the items off the table didn't in any way sound like it hit Emily or hurt Emily. It's a bit of a give and take walking that line. I actually produced a couple versions of that scene. I think we found the right balance in the end.
I have to say that the final scene, the end product, was not anywhere near as intense as it was in the earlier drafts.
Okay.
There were a lot more intense scenes in there that just we decided not to include in this episode. You know, I think I said in a previous podcast, the first drafts for me, I just include everything, including the kitchen sink. And then we go back and take out stuff and we go back and, okay, this may be too much. This is crossing a line. This is going too far. But I'm like, oh, man, I'm just putting it all in there.
It's the same on the production side, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, Phil, in a case like this, though, now, did you kind of pull yourself back, or did you float it and then have executive producer Dave Arnold or somebody else?
Oh, no, I didn't pull myself back. I floated it and let everybody else go. Nope, can't do that. Nope, can't. You know, there's in television, there's this thing called standards and practices.
Yes.
All the networks have these standards and practices. And of course, we have them at Focus on the Family, too. We have them on Adventures in Odyssey. We have standards and practices. But in first drafts that nobody else is supposed to see except us, I just flaunt the conventions all the time. It's like, let's just see what we can put in here and see what happens. And usually it's our, you know, our guardians who shall remain, Dave Arnold and Marshall Younger, are really good at going, no, can't do that. Nope. That's too far.
You know, most of this episode is grounded in the real world of Odyssey. But there's a scene where Maury experiences his conscience for the first time, and he hears his friends and even Jesus talking to him. So, Luke, talk about producing this scene, and how did you make it sound different than the others?
Well, Phil did a great job of setting up the scene's production in the script. He noted that the voices of Witt, Emily, Cooper, and Suzu should have reverb on them. So that's what I did. I put reverb on them and panned the voices back and forth to make them sound as if they were like swirling around and overlapping. This was written in the script. And suddenly a new voice, more powerful and clear, speaks, and all other sounds cease. And so that's kind of what I did. The voice of Jesus was up close and personal. And Dave Arnold, our executive producer, once again voiced Jesus. He did a great job. A lot of the stuff in that scene was pulled directly from what Phil had notated in the script.
Bless your heart on that, Luke. I used to, in the early days, just layer descriptions of sound effects. And then I thought, well, we have such talented people doing the sound design. I mean, all of you guys, Luke is great at this stuff. And so part of me is like, why am I telling them what to do? They know much better than I what should go here and what shouldn't go here. I started just pulling all of that out, not directing on the page, in other words, not telling them what to do or anything like that. But there are still certain scenes for me. There are still certain scenes that I look at and go, you know what? I am going to do that this time. Not that I'm trying to tell Luke exactly what to do here. We're still collaborating on this. And if he has a better idea, I am all ears. That's great. I just wanted him to get the feel of where I was going with this. And he did. I mean, you just did. You aced it, man. It was really great.
Cool.
And Luke, do you find it helpful when the writers do provide that extra input?
Especially in special scenes like this, special circumstances like this. I want to capture the writer's vision, but I also want to infuse my own stuff into it too. So it's helpful. Yeah. It's helpful when the writers help get me like halfway there in my imagination. Then I can kind of come along for the rest.
Yeah. You know, this was an episode I've been looking forward to because like I said before, I wanted Maury to experience those consequences. So looking back, what do both of you hope listeners take away from these adventures?
I have a whole thing going on here with Maury that I'm hoping everybody picks up on, and I'm just going to tease that. I'm not going to go any further with it. I don't want to tell everybody. I want them to get it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
I love this character. I think Maury is such an interesting guy. All of this is part of his journey and what's happening with him, and I find him to be really fascinating in a lot of different respects. All I really want to tell everybody is really listen, you know, pay attention to what's going on with him. And him, as it relates to how we look at other characters, even if they're not interacting with Maury, but just other characters in Odyssey, how we present those characters and how those characters all interact with each other. This is a really interesting tapestry that we're building here, especially right now. This whole period of episodes that we're doing right now is a really interesting tapestry. I want people to really kind of dig deeper on this one. That would be my takeaway. Dig deeper on this.
You know, there's been a lot of tension so far between Emily and Maury and Emily and Wit in these Rydell stories. In these episodes, there's themes of forgiveness and reconciliation and teamwork and new beginnings. I just love that. I think it's such an important message for life.
Yeah, Luke, you're so right. You can't live, you know, a proper life without offering forgiveness, that forgiveness that Jesus offers us so freely, and holding grudges just does not work. So appreciate both you guys joining us in the studio and sharing some thoughts on this very important episode.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Great to be here as always.
Hopefully you haven't made it this far into the podcast without having heard the Rydell realizations. But just in case you haven't heard it,
or if you want to go back and listen again with new ears,
you can hear the Rydell Realizations in Album 76, Keep It Together in the Club on CD and download.
If you're listening to this album on the radio or online, this weekend's episode features the return of several familiar faces. Let's have Chris tell us who they are.
On the next adventure in Odyssey, Buck tries to adjust to his new school in Baltimore.
I'm pretty sure I'm in the wrong wing, and I'm late for class carrying a football bag and balancing 7 books and a massive slushie.
All that will have to wait when Jason comes to town with a special request.
We really need an inside man.
Are you saying you want me to be a spy?
It's a strange welcome to the neighborhood for Buck, next time on Adventures in Odyssey.
You can find radio stations in your area on our website, or you can listen online starting Saturday. That's at adventuresinodyssey.com.
We're coming to the end of another album, which means it will soon be time for the Odyssey team to answer your questions.
If you're curious about anything in Album 76, the latest club adventures, or really anything going on in Odyssey, call our toll-free comment line at 1-855-784-WHIT. Always make sure to have your parents' permission before you call.
But that's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation of Focus on the Family.
And that website again is adventuresinodyssey.com, and the call-in line is 1-855-784-WIT.
Or if you need to talk to someone in person, the number is 1-800-A-FAMILY. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day is an adventure.
Adventures in Odyssey has taken generations of children on an exciting journey, all the while sharing biblical principles and activating their imaginations. Now, in 2024, we'll be airing our 1,000th episode. To celebrate, we're inviting every member of the Odyssey family to join us for one grand party. This spectacular two-day event is packed with fun and excitement for Adventures in Odyssey fans of every age. Partygoers will enjoy an unmatched immersive experience into the town of Odyssey. Meet and greets with cast and crew, Q&A sessions, trivia contests, and more. The party is topped off with a live episode recording starring fan favorite characters. It's all happening on August 2nd and 3rd in beautiful Colorado Springs, Colorado. Tickets for One Grand Party are going fast. Learn more at onegrandparty.com.